Hey, guys. Back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and every body. The weather is getting warmer and it's time to swap my winter layers for fun, vibrant, and cool clothing. With so many fun things happening this spring, like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, it's hard to find great looking clothes that fit you just right. That's why I love JCPenney. JCPenney has so many stylish and comfortable options for so many different body types. I've been blown away by their selection and everything hugs my body in all the right spots. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with style that gets you. Something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
Welcome into the Ravens Press Pass Podcast. It is Tuesday, April 9th. Today, the Ravens held their annual pre-draft press conference with head coach John Harbaugh and general manager Eric DaCosta. They talked about some of the moves of the offseason, their strategy going into this draft, and how they're building this roster to compete for a championship in 2024. There's a lot of good insight from them, so let's go ahead and jump into that presser.
All right, everyone. Well, thanks for coming. We are in the literally in the middle of draft meetings. We started yesterday with our coaches. We took an early break today so we could come down here and grace you all with our appearance. And we'll get started back at 1:15. We'll probably finish our draft meeting sometime on Friday afternoon or Saturday morning. And at that point, the board will be pretty much set. We'll have a few days the week of the draft to just kind of tweak things a little bit based on workouts and some additional interviews that we conduct. But I think by the end of this week, we'll be in very good shape to figure out who we're going to draft at pick 30. Questions?
Eric, with three starters gone along the offensive line, how much do you think the draft will be used to address some of those holes?
Well, I mean, I certainly think it's a big factor for us in terms of team building this year. I mean, we spent the entire day yesterday, just to give you an idea, all of yesterday, starting at 9 o'clock in the morning to 6 o'clock at night, was spent on the offensive line. And that's not necessarily because it's a big priority for us, as much as the volume of players at those positions this year. Took us a long time to cover through all those players and go through all the information and get them ranked. So it's a very deep pool of players. We see a lot of different opportunities in different rounds to get players at tackle, guard, and center. And we're excited about that.
Okay. Eric, how pleased were you to be able to re-sign Kyle Van Noy last week? And when you just look at the outside linebacker position, you guys do have quite a few young guys, first, second, third year. Just where do you think you are just at that position as you get closer to the season?
Well, first, we were very excited to bring Kyle back. You know, it was a great experience for us last year with Kyle, and I think Kyle would say the same. He's certainly a player that helped us quite a bit. Love his mentality, leadership, physicality that he brings, versatility as a player. I think it's great to have a veteran in the room. And we do have a lot of younger guys. We have a lot of younger guys that we think have a lot of potential. And we would expect those guys to reach their potential this year. We're very excited about really all those young players. And we've seen some quality play. We've seen some flashes of quality play. And we're very excited and we can't wait to get started.
How deep is this draft as far as edge rushing goes? And how is it difficult to sort of see how the pass rushing skills in college translate to the NFL?
Oh, man. Well, I think it's an average draft, I would say, for edge pass rushers. There's certainly some guys at the top. For us, we've had success throughout the years in finding some guys in the middle rounds that have been good players for us. It really depends on what you're looking for. You've got your speed rushers, your power guys, guys that can do both, guys that have to play in a three-point stance, guys that can play in two-point two-point stance. So a lot of it has to do with just your fit and what you're looking for. Our coaches play a big part in that in their evaluation. Chuck Smith does a really, really good job evaluating pass rushers and has done a good job for us coaching those guys as well. So we'll get the board squared away. Certainly some guys at the top that probably won't be there when we pick. And so the challenge for us will be who's that next tier group of guys in that sweet spot between, you know, the 25th player to the 45th player that we have a chance to get either at 30 or at 62.
Eric, you have 9 picks right now. Is that a number that you want to be at? Do you want to add to that? And I guess as part of that, how much value do you put on the fifth-year option? You know, in the first round of the trade back, you know, you lose that. And how does that factor into the decision-making in terms of trades back?
Well, it's great to have additional picks. You certainly have to have players that you covet and that you want to draft. And so that's always a factor with every draft. I mean, you could have 15 picks, and sometimes you're there and at the end of the draft and you're looking at the board and you have no idea who you want to pick. You just don't see anybody that you really covet. So, you know, I always think about it as like, what picks do you need to get the players that you want to take? So you can have some great picks, but if the board doesn't fall the right way, and you're looking at a bunch of players that aren't any better than the players you have on your roster, those picks really don't help you very much. So I like the idea of having more picks, but I want to have more picks in a specific range, I think, in the draft. And if we can get that done, then I could see us, be in a good position to really maximize our chances to find good players. As far as the fifth year goes, I mean, yeah, there is an advantage to having an extra year if you want that extra year. So all things being equal, if you trade out of the first round, I think that you should get a premium if you're going to do that to give up that additional year.
Eric, speaking of the fifth-year option, you're about a month away from the deadline for Rashad Bateman and Adafi Oweh's fifth-year option decision. Do you anticipate you'll be picking either of those up?
Yeah, I think we're about a month away from that decision, right? So that's probably when we'll make that decision, I would think. But yeah, you know, we'll have more to say about that probably after the draft.
Eric, when we've been here year after year, it's been the two of you plus Joe Ortiz. There's only two of you up here today. How has his absence affected anything this spring?
Well, there's definitely more leg room up here. Probably more comfortable because he was always kind of butting into us. No, it's been a change for me, definitely. I miss Joe. I miss his personality. Joe's a great evaluator. And so first and foremost, for me, the comfort that I would have with Joe saying, hey, Joe, take a look at these guys and let me know what you think. Great instincts, great feel as an evaluator. And saying that, we've got other guys that are excel at that as well. You know, John is a great evaluator. Ozzie Newsom's a Hall of Fame evaluator. George Kokinas, David Blackburn. Our coaches do a great job. So we definitely have guys who can pick up the slack. I was thinking about it today coming in. I think this is my 20th year running the draft. I think my first year was 2005 draft, the Mark Clayton draft. And so it's crazy to think that, you know, everything that goes into it, 20 years. And Joe was with me for, I think, 19 of those 20 years. So obviously it's a big change, but I think one that is exciting, and we certainly have people who can step up and really get it done.
Eric, what are the challenges that come with picking this late in the draft? You guys have the 30th pick, kind of have to let the board play itself out, it feels like.
Yeah, you know, I don't see any unique challenges picking early, picking late. It's really the same. You know, it's just having the players that you really want be there when you have to pick. And, you know, if you have a typical draft, if you're picking 10th, you maybe have 4 or 5 guys you really want. If you're picking 28th or 30th, you might only have 15 or 20 guys that you really want. And the way your brain works, you kind of like ascribe a value to players, and you're hoping to get that value at that pick. You really want to get value. And so for us, it's just like you just hope and pray that, you know, one of those, you know, top 20 guys might be there for us at 30. So we have some additional value associated with that. But in the end, you just grade the players and you rank the players. Go ahead. No, go ahead.
What's it been like for you two in terms of collaborating on, you know, and discussing with your staff about the picks, and in terms of also how the combine and the interviewing process has gone? Have you guys had difference of opinions and stuff of that nature about players that maybe you'll battle until it's draft day?
Well, that's just a part of it. You know, Jerry, I think one thing I learned from Ozzie and watching Ozzie over the years with Coach Marchibroda and Coach Billick and then with Coach Harbaugh, is it's a partnership, and you work together, you discuss. You know, I love my day-to-day meetings with John and his coaches, talking about our players, talking about the draft, talking about strategies. That's one of the very biggest joys of this job for me, day-to-day. And, you know, we disagree sometimes, John and I, we disagree, but I think we appreciate each other's perspective on things. We trust each other, and we both know that we're coming from the right place. And for me, that's one of the most rewarding aspects of being a general manager.
John, there's so much attention about offensive line and who could you draft. I know you don't like to use the word comfortable, but are there internal young options now that on the roster already that you feel like are ready to step in and be starting offensive linemen?
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be competitive. There's going to be a competition for those spots. I mean, the best, whoever plays the best, we always say, who's the best player? It's the player who plays the best, you know, and you could have been the best player 5 years ago, but you're not the best player now. So every day you go out to practice, every game you play, there's an accumulated, established aspect of it. But right now we're a little more open. So those guys that you're talking about are going to be competing with whoever comes in here, and we'll just see who does it. But I think those guys are ready to compete and do well, and they'll be in here Monday. Can't wait to see them. It's going to be great to see those guys in here Monday working hard and see what happens.
Eric, if we can, on a related note, Eric, last year you jumped back in and grabbed Andrew Voorhees. Could you go back to kind of recount how that came about? And with the year layoff, where is he at and what can you realistically expect?
Yeah, well, I did that just because I knew all you guys wanted to go home. And so I was hoping to catch you guys as you were leaving the facility so you'd all have to come back and cover the draft. But no, seriously. You know, Andrew was a guy that I had seen on tape, and I thought that he was a good player and that he would have a chance long term to be a player for us and be a starter for us potentially, a physical, tough guy that loves football. So, you know, we were just sitting there, and we hadn't made a trade, and he was still available, and I just had this idea that if we, because we had already had our kind of end of the day press conference, and I was watching, and I thought I was going to go upstairs and just call the ended up being Andrew Berry, which typically we wouldn't do a lot of trades with in divisional opponents, but he was happy to do it, and so it made all the sense in the world for us to do it. So it just seemed to me that we would get some value with him as a player, that had he been in the draft and been healthy, he'd have been a higher pick, and I saw ability potentially for him to be a starter at guard in the league. So we'll see. He's done a fantastic job with rehab. He's very, very strong and physical, if you guys have seen him. The strength coaches and the trainers and the doctors are all very excited about him, and so we'll see what he does.
Eric, I think you've got 20 picks, if you include the comp picks, between, you know, this year's draft and next year's draft, somewhere in that neighborhood. Curious, how important is that, given sort of the financial construct of the roster now? And I'm sure it wasn't intentional, but just maybe the value of that from your perspective for this year and next.
Right. So we, you know, looking out last year, we felt like we could trade a couple draft picks last year. We did that. We got Roquan with the idea that we would have to start to build up again. You know, we've always been, you guys have covered us for a long time. We've always been a team that's been built through the draft primarily. We've always had a lot of draft picks. I think we probably have had, if not the most draft picks in the last 10 years, definitely in the top, you know, quarter of all the teams in the league. Probably near the top, though, for sure. And that's by design. We feel that's the best way to build your team long term, from a, you know, a cost standpoint, obviously, cheaper players, but also young players that you know a lot about who can develop and become good players. And so we see this year's draft, and we see next year's draft as real opportunities for us to begin to build that depth up again. You know, I think this past year's team, we had tremendous depth. And the challenge now is for these younger players on the roster right now to be a part of that depth and for us to find additional players who can come in and compete to start and be good depth players for us moving forward.
Eric, there's been a lot of talk about the offensive line class and the wide receiver class. We haven't talked a lot about the cornerback class. How do you view that group?
You know, I think it's a solid class. Certainly probably not at the level of the receiver, and offensive line, you know, very cyclical, but definitely some players who can come in right away and probably compete to start for us. We would love to add a talented corner at some point in the draft, whether that's first round or second round, third round, whatever that might be, a talented player who can help us. That's a position, as you all know, that, you know, typically you never have enough due to injuries and different things. The guys will break down throughout the course of the season. I think our depth has always been tested in the secondary. This year was no exception, and we were blessed to have some guys like, for instance, Ronald Darby come in and really help us. And so, yeah, if we have a chance to draft a corner this year, you can count on us doing that.
Eric, how relevant is it over the last several years you select one position in the first round, like wide receiver three times in the recent past? Does that inform the conversation this year? Well, we've done that already three times in the last 5 years or whatever. Is that part of the conversation, or is it just best player regardless?
Well, I think it depends on, you know, best player and also team need, both. I mean, so, you know, if there's a player that's there that we think is too good to pass up on, we're going to take that player. We've proven that. We've shown that. That's started with Ozzie Newsome, and that's going to continue as far as I'm concerned. As long as I'm here, we're going to take the best available player. So now, that being said, you know, if you're picking in the first round, you have an MVP quarterback, and there's a quarterback that's the best available player, chances are we're not going to draft the quarterback. But all things being equal, we're going to draft the best available player when we're on the clock.
Eric, in terms of evaluating, with this new kickoff rule, does that change how you evaluate potential returners, or the skill sets are what they are, and that's the evaluation process won't change at all in those players?
Well, that's a good question, and I would say this, that I've been blessed to have a head coach who's a special teams coach, and we've got excellent special teams coaches upstairs. Those guys are really invaluable to me whenever we discuss special teams and what these rule changes might mean and the type of players that we're looking for and the skill sets that we're looking for. So, you know, we want athletes and we want playmakers. They have to catch the ball. They got to be able to break tackles. They got to be able to make guys miss. And so, you know, I think we're in the process of addressing that in different ways. There's certainly some skilled guys in the draft, some excellent returners. We've talked about a few guys already. And I think we'll be in good shape in September.
John, when you look at your roster now, what part of it do you think could be filled through the draft, and maybe that you're kind of edging a little bit with your opinions for basket?
I feel like you're trying to get Eric, the one he won't ask, you're trying to come through me on that. See if I'll give it up, right? You know, maybe Harbaugh will chirp, you know. Maybe he'll be the canary. I'm the canary, I guess. The best available player. Isn't that what we said? It depends, again. It depends on, we do have some needs. I mean, I've got my depth chart, there's no doubt. And Eric and I talk about that all the time, where the blocks are and what the roles are specifically for those guys. I mean, kind of what type of player do we need and what type of spot to build our team from the top to the bottom. I mean, there's a lot of thought that goes into that, a lot of conversation that goes into that. So it's not just the position. It's not just, hey, an offensive lineman, a guard, a tackle, a wide receiver, a corner, a pass rusher, whatever, a tight end. It's what type of player do we need and what roles do we need filled, even right through from offense or defense right down through special teams. These are all the jobs that need to be done, and who fills those jobs the best in a way that can win for us, not just he can do that. It's who's going to excel at what. And so that kind of is part of the team building process. And that goes with the scheme too, you know. So sometimes you get players that are a little bit different, so you want to move your scheme that way. Sometimes you have a way you want to play, you have needs on your roster, so you move your draft a little bit that way. I think that's kind of all part of the art of the whole thing.
John, along those lines, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago with Lamar kind of providing his insight on receiver. We saw that last year, obviously, with Zay. What's that dialogue been like as you guys get closer? And what, you know, we know that you guys have had some guys here for pre-draft visits and so forth. That a position, you know, I guess either one of you guys are looking at in Lamar's sort of input there.
Yeah, I mean, we talked right at the beginning of the offseason, right after the season, about, you know, the type of guy, type of role that he felt would fit. And we were all on the same page with that part of it, you know, like in terms of our roster, kind of what would be comfortable and who we're looking for style-wise. But it doesn't always work out that way. So Lamar, you know, he's been tasked over the text, you know, world with a couple of assignments, right? So we'll see who he likes, you know, and he looks at guys on tape and he's never been shy about giving his opinion on free agents or the draft. So he hasn't weighed in quite yet, but he will.
Eric, you talked earlier about Andrew Voorhees, a guy you drafted last year, hoping that he can make an impact this year. It seemed like Trent Simpson is another one of those guys. How do you feel about that linebacker spot? Is that another one of the spots that maybe you could look for depth in this draft as well?
Well, first, I think, you know, Trenton is going to have a great season. He's great attitude. I think he grew as much as anybody this year. It's tough, you know, for young players. He showed up on special teams. When he played on defense, he made some plays late in the year. Got a lot of talent. I mean, he's as talented as any inside linebacker in this year's draft class, for sure. So excited about him. I think we've got some other young players that, you know, can emerge as well that we're excited about at that position. The draft, we've looked at some guys, definitely some talent in this year's draft class. You know, I think it's a pretty good class. There's no, like, top 10 probably inside linebackers in this draft class, but there's a lot of depth in the second and third and fourth rounds. And so certainly a position we'll look at, particularly if they can play on special teams and help us that way too, which is a really important part of the inside linebacker position evaluation-wise. But we like our young guys that we have, excited about those guys, and we'll see how the whole thing kind of plays out.
Eric, along those same lines, running backs probably haven't been primary in a lot of the draft talk this year, but I mean, when you look at that group, do you see some players that maybe you could get on day three who could maybe come in right away and help?
I think so. I mean, you know, I think it was an interesting dynamic this year in free agency. You saw whatever it was, maybe 9 or 10 guys get signed on the first day of free agency. And I think part of that was probably, you know, how people looked at this running back class in the draft. There's no, like, top tier first round necessarily type talents this year. That being said, there's a lot of guys, if you're looking at the prospects in the second, third, and fourth round, there's a lot of those guys, particularly third, fourth, fifth round clumps. So we've looked at those guys very closely. We're excited about some of those players. You know, there's probably a pretty strong chance we will draft a running back at some point, you know, round obviously to be determined. But we do think there's a chance for us to get a good young player who can help us in different ways as a running back in the passing game and also on special teams.
Hey, Eric. And John, you guys were one game away from the Super Bowl. You made some acquisitions. You retained some players. This phrase is going around the NFL a lot. All in. Ravens, all in as far as 2024?
Well, I'd like to think, Jay, we're always all in. You know, in this business, if you're not all in, then you're all out as far as I'm concerned. So we're going to be in every single year. And I know that's what John expects. That's what I expect. That's what Steve expects. And I think that's what our fans expect. So I think, you know, you should expect that too, Jerry.
Eric, when you do lose, you know, it's a varying types of players that you lost in free agency, but it was about a dozen players in free agency.
Yeah.
How do you view where this team, though, is? Because you hear terms like retooling, you know, reloading. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, as a guy that's building this team, where do you kind of feel, what kind of description would you say the team is right now?
Well, we're in the same place as we were last year at this time. I mean, go back and look at what some of you wrote last year and see how we ended up, right? We have a lot of time to make moves. A lot of these players that we lost, excellent players, a lot of these guys were acquired in August, right? Some of these guys were acquired in September. So, you know, we're still building. And a big part of that is going to be through the draft, which is why we're all here today. But there's a lot of different opportunities along the way to add players. We've traded for players. We've drafted players. We signed guys as unrestricted free agents. We signed guys, street players who have made it. We've worked guys out. George Kokinas and Mark Acevedo do a phenomenal job of bringing players in. Our coaches do a great job working guys out, giving us a chance to find guys like, I'll mention them again, Ronald Darby. You know, those type of players, Arthur Millette, players like that. So I think we're just really getting started, you know, and a big part of that is certainly going to be the draft. But the destination is September, not May.
Eric, to that point, where does that philosophy kind of come from, being able to kind of wait until, like you mentioned, signing guys in August? In the case of Van Noy, that was after the season, and these guys, you know, a lot of these guys have panned out, and some of them are at premium positions. Where does, I guess, the patience and that philosophy come from to kind of wait until that time of year?
Well, number one, I'm not a patient person. I've learned from Ozzie, who is extremely patient, to be more patient. But I don't think it's a philosophy necessarily as much as an opportunity. So I look at every single year as being different. Every opportunity is different. Every situation might be different. But we've got to be able to pounce when there is an opportunity that we think is beneficial to the club. And so whether that's doing something in March or April or May or September or November, we're going to do that, given the parameters of the situation and where we are as a team at that time.
Eric, not a lot of underclassmen in this year's draft pool. How is that kind of affecting how you look at day three? And do you guys feel like you do enough homework looking at next year's draft pool to maybe decide we don't really like where we are, like let's say in the sixth round, let's mm-hmm. maybe look at possibly into next year's pool?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good question. There are less juniors this year. You know, I think guys, for whatever reason, I think because of COVID partly and because of NIL, you know, this whole draft landscape has changed. There's less players in the draft this year. There's less probably draftable players this year on our board. Less juniors, less underclassmen. And so, yeah, I think it is, and we've talked about doing this. We haven't done it as much as maybe I'd like to do it potentially. We've talked about the idea, as you get into the later rounds of the draft, if there's nobody there that you covet, potentially trading that pick for a better pick. You know, that's one of the nuances of the draft. When you trade a pick in a given round for next year's pick, you get the benefit of increased value. So if you trade a fifth-round pick this year, you'd get a fourth-round pick, hypothetically, next year. That discount is actually, if you think about it, it only makes sense because the pick's a year away, but a pick is a pick, so it's hard to wrap your fingers around the idea that you get more for next year's pick, even though the pick is worth whatever it's worth. So, but there is an opportunity there, and some teams do it pretty well. We always tend to look at the board and see players that we like, that we covet, and we haven't done it quite as much. We've done it a couple times, but that's always an interesting thing. I think Steve would love us to do that. He's excited about that. His idea would be, not to give anything away, but he has what he calls the Bisciotti Reign of Terror, and that would basically be that you trade a seventh-round pick in any given year for a sixth-round pick next year, and then take that sixth-round pick and trade it for a five, and then trade that five for a four. And so, like, in 7 or 8 years, you'd have a first-round pick. And we've always talked about that, but we never get to that point.
How many times does that work in NFL history?
That's why it's called the Bisciotti Reign of Terror. It's unique.
Eric, do you anticipate any moves being made over the next couple weeks that could impact your prominent needs heading into the draft?
Oh, man, you never know, Jeff. You just never know. I mean, it just depends. If the phone rings, maybe there's a move to be made. If there's a player that a coach comes in and says, this guy's really good, or George comes in, or whatever it might be, then we could make a move. I think, in general, you know, Kyle was one of the last things on my checklist, trying to get that done, because I think he checked off a lot of different boxes for us. Veteran presence on defense. Multiple roles on defense, you know, just a good solid player for us at a position where we could use some depth. So, you know, I don't know that we'll do a lot in the next couple weeks other than really kind of polish the board up and get ready for the process.
Eric, analytics has become such a big part of, you know, not just the game, but this process, and going back even a handful of years or so, probably when it sort of started to blossom. I'm curious, like, how that's shaped your philosophy when it, you know, when it comes to draft picks and so forth, and is there maybe, you know, examples where it's swayed you on a guy or a direction, that sort of thing?
You know, it's a tool. It's a tool that we use, like anything else. It's a part of the process, evaluation process. We've got some really skilled people upstairs who help in a lot of different ways. I think we have so much information now that processing the information and organizing the information, I think, is extremely important and critical. In the end, in my opinion, I'm an old school guy, it still comes down to turning the TV on and watching the player over and over and over and over again until you know exactly what he is. And, you know, I think that's a really important part of the scouting process. and that will always remain a very important part of the scouting process.
John, I know you guys brought back Josh Johnson to be the backup quarterback. You still have Malik Cunningham. We saw him play a little wide receiver on the back end of the season. Is the plan still to develop him as a quarterback, or is there a transition?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it remains to be seen. You know, we're going to take a look at him and see how he does and just get to know him better and evaluate him. He's definitely developmental as a quarterback. He's developmental as a wide receiver, too, but he's a good athlete. He's a good person. He's a competitive guy. He wants to do well. I was just thinking, listening to the questions back about the team and the parts and all that and the math of the whole thing, and I think it's really interesting and good to look at the parts. Like you say, okay, they lost this many guys. Yeah, this many guys are not going to be as good of a team, you know, and or how they're going to fill these pieces. And that's kind of a math equation. But in the end, it's not just about the parts. It's about the sum of the parts. You know, can the sum be greater than the parts? And it's how you put the parts together and how you piece them together. So the process is it's about getting the best players you can. And I do agree, you know, they say it's not about the X's and O's. It's about the Jimmys and Joes. That's real clever and it rhymes. But it really is about more than just the Jimmys and the Joes, too. It's how the Jimmys and the Joes fit together and how they're pieced together and how you build the schemes and how you build the whole machine. So we've got the parts, but we're also building the whole machine, you know, and we've done that in the last 3 months with our scheme. You do that with your culture, with your work ethic, with your character, type of people you bring into your program, what type of vision you have, what type of identity you're going to have as a football team. All those things go into it. And it's not just a math equation at the end of the year, like Eric said. These same questions were being asked last year. They were being asked the year before, and the year before that, and the year before that, and the year before that, all the way back. Every year it's the same questions. And it's kind of a rolling type of a thing. Some years you're going to lose more free agents, but you're going to pick up more compensatory picks. Then 2 years from now, you're going to have more picks in the draft. Then you're going to get younger, and you're going to have younger players who cost less. But you're going to have to pay the guys that turned out to be great players that you want to keep as many as you can. So that ongoing process is part of this whole big picture. And the goal is to be all in to the question every single year as best as you can be. You can't just be, oh, we're gonna put all our chips on the table this year, next year we're going to fold and not play any games. No, we're going to try to win the championship every single year, as many games as we can. And it's the sum of the parts that we put together and what we build around those guys and go out there and play on Sundays and lay it all out there, you know, and with a bunch of fans yelling and screaming in the background to support your football team. That's what we're all about. That's what football is. It's not just a math equation. It's more than that, and that's what makes it so exciting and so interesting. And we're going to have a heck of a team next year. You wait. You watch. You wait and see what we do.
What positions in this draft do you feel have more value and depth for days 2 and 3?
I think offensive line is pretty stacked across the board in most rounds. I think receiver is a really deep draft this year. You know, those would be two. I think, you know, I mentioned running back. I think that you'll see a lot of running backs get drafted probably starting in the third round, you know, through the seventh. You'll see a lot of guys get picked. You know, those would be positions that when I look at the assess the draft, I think are pretty deep positions in the draft this year.
John, how do you like the new rule, the kickoff rule, and also the challenges of teaching tackling when it comes to the hip drop that is now illegal?
As far as the new kickoff rule, I love the fact that kickoff returns me back in the game. You know, I'm kind of on record as saying, I wish they would have looked at a couple of other things before taking the line of scrimmage out of the kickoff return play. Because the onside kicks and all that are still pretty cool. And they'd already taken the wedges out and the double teams out. You know, if you create some space for the kickoff return team to operate, maybe that would have slowed the kickoff team down. That was a theory. But they went all in with this new rule. And I'd rather have this than what we had in the past, where they were going all in for fair catches. That was, you know, we were never in favor of that. So I think Roger really wanted the kickoff return back in the game, and that's good. That's a good thing. As far as the hip drop tackle, the challenge of tackling, I don't even understand the question. I mean, the hip drop tackle, when did you ever hear about the hip drop tackle until like 2 years ago, 3 years ago, right? That's because it was discovered probably in rugby and started being executed as a standalone technique. It's a three-part movement. You've got to execute that play. You've got to be close enough to that ball carry to actually get him around the hips, all right? Pull him close to yourself, swing your hips through, and drop on the back of his legs. If you're that close, wrap him up and tackle him and take him to the ground like Ray Lewis used to do, and everybody did for 100 years before that. But you're talking about a tackle that the ball carrier has no method of escape from. He can't escape. So when you drop down on the back of his legs, it's a mass, and it's 25 times more likely to have a serious injury. So it's really a bad play, and it needed to be out. And guys are going to tackle just fine without the quote-unquote hip drop tackle, because they tackled just fine without it for 100 years of football before that, when you never saw it, really. So that's my answer to that.
Eric, with offensive linemen, there's going to be maybe a few offensive linemen prospects that could fall to the bottom of the first round because they don't have as much starting experience as some of the other guys that are being taken early. How difficult, or what's kind of the challenge to project, especially offensive linemen, when they may not have as much game film, game tape, as some of the other guys?
Yeah, that's always a challenge at any position. You know, lack of production, whether that's catches, tackles, interceptions, ball play, starts as an offensive lineman. That's always, you know, in my opinion, those are one of the greatest challenges is that. The other one might be, you know, level of competition is a big challenge too, I think, as an evaluator. So those are things you just fight through. And you watch, you talk to people, you assess, you watch the workouts. I think in some cases, you know, positional workouts are very, very important. You know, you go back and you watch as much tape as you can. Maybe that means you have to go back to other years and watch a guy play as well. Talk to people, talk to coaches and things. But it's definitely a challenge, Jameson, for sure.
Two more.
Eric, last year at the draft, you announced the Lamar Jackson contract extension. Does going into this year's draft feel a little bit lighter now that you don't have to drop any big news on draft night? You feel a little bit more clear-headed going into it?
Well, right now, yeah. I mean, it's been great, you know. I mean,
still,
John and
still
I.
Still 2 weeks almost. I mean, there's still plenty of time for stuff to happen.
John and I were down last week down in at the owners' meetings in the pool hanging out, you know, drinking champagne cocktails, you know, getting some sun. So, you know, nah, it's been a good vibe so far. Obviously, it's always hard to see some of your favorite players go to other teams. I mean, that's been a challenge, but you know, I think in terms of just being in a good spot, the vibe has been good. We're building this team the right way. We're very excited to get started up next week with our players coming back, and we think the future is extremely bright.
Eric, given the fact that there has been some depth that has left the building this offseason, having more draft picks this year, could this rookie draft class be primed for bigger roles?
Oh, there's no question. I mean, opportunity is what it's all about, and so we'll have some opportunities for sure. There's going to be some spots that can be filled, and I think it's the burden is on me to find those players who can fill it and fill it with winning football. And we've got the coaches and support staff to put them in position to succeed, but we've got to find the players that have the right makeup and the right ability to actually perform and do that.
You're listening to the Ravens Press Pass podcast feed. And if you want more of an in-depth breakdown of everything we heard from DaCosta and Harbaugh, head over to the Lounge podcast feed. Brian, Mink, and I break it all down for you, give you our insight and takeaways on what we heard from them today. Thank you so much for listening. Make sure you leave a rating and a review and hit that subscribe button as well. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again soon.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah! And some waves so we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that!
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in!
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it!
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Awards Watch says Liam Neeson is at his best. Don't miss In the Land of Saints and Sinners. Having left his dark past behind, retired hitman Finbar Murphy, played by Neeson, leads a quiet life in a remote coastal Irish town. But when a menacing crew of terrorists arrive, Finbar is drawn into a vicious game of cat and mouse, forcing him to choose between exposing his secret identity or defending his friends and neighbors. In the Land of Saints and Sinners, from Samuel Goldwyn Films and Sony Pictures Home Entertainment. Watch it now on digital. Rated R.